Yes, hello, Regeru. How are you doing? Yeah, I don't know. Are you hearing? I'm a tad nasal. I'm not like this, Ted, or a horse like this while I've been. But I'm a tad nasal. Yes, good ears there, Reggie. A tad nasal, but, you know, here we are in February, and that's not bad. I haven't been sick yet of any major degree. So you have to, you have to get sniffles sometimes, right? Hopefully my immune system is still fairly strong. I've been vaccinated, had the flu shot, so I seem to, I've always been fairly germ, my immune system seems to always be pretty strong to fight off regular things. But every so often, you know, a little germ gets in there. Yeah, but good ear. That's why you're sitting behind the glass. Okay, are you ready to go? Let's do this thing then, right? Put it in the book. Episode number 402. Not O. Got to remember that when I talk to the actual people. For you, I could say O. No one's hearing any of this. I get that. But you watch when we start recording, I will say 402. Well, you know what? How do I say that? 402, right? It's not an O, though. 402. There you go. All right, here we go. Ready? Put it in the books. 402. Star, smile, strong. 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain. Whoa, slow down, my friend. Wait a minute. Yeah, I know, you're trigger happy. Here we go. 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. And welcome to another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNRadio.com or wherever you go to find your favorite podcast. We are there. Don't forget, an important part of being a member of the Captain Podtastic community is not only listening, but also getting out there, spreading the word. Tell your friends, tell your family, tell your neighbors, tell anybody who listens to a podcast that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and it should be theirs too. Your loyalty and devotion are much appreciated. And if you're enjoying what you're hearing on a regular basis here on the podcast, don't forget, you can listen to lots and lots and lots more of whatever this is. Just go to WGNRadio.com, go to the podcast section, hit the prompt for this podcast, and stand clear. The doors will explode. A burst of podcasts will engulf you going back. So just keep scrolling down and loading more. We've been doing a lot. This is episode 402. Did you hear that? Yes. I was talking to Reggie, the producer, before we went on here. And yes, I am a tad nasal. Not overly nasal. But Reggie heard it, and I'm sure you could too. A little nasal. But what do you expect? Here we are in the heart of winter, I would say. I mean, the funny thing is, and maybe another month or so, 3 weeks, 4 weeks, a little more than that, we'll get into March. March 1st, of course, is the official, well, it's not the official. I don't know what's official anymore. Meteorological spring starts March 1st. So, you know, here we are in February. Just beginning the month, short month, although extra day this year, leap year, it's a leap year. So we go to a February 29th, but we've been getting through the winter okay here in Chicago. We had a very, very subterranean or subarctic cold spell for about a week where we were under zero. Fairly, the temperatures were under zero. But we've made it through, and now, from what I'm seeing, we're going to be in the 30s and 40s, you know, for the next couple of weeks. So that's great. We deserve it. But you have to expect some germs or bacteria, whatever it is that causes a cold, to sneak in. I mean, nobody is completely immune. I've always had a fairly good immune system. Fight off the weak kind of little sniffles and colds. I'm vaccinated for the flu shot, vaccinated for COVID, so I feel fairly confident. But every so often, a sniffle might get in. A sniffle isn't bad, thankfully. It's just a sniffle at this point. You never know what to do in that in this little area right here, this kind of limbo area, where you first begin to feel a little sniffle, a little congestion. I don't have a fever or anything. As I said, my voice is obviously a little nasal because of the nose being a little clogged up. But but it seems like you're always like at the precipice here. You're like, okay, I'm just beginning to feel this. Hopefully, I will just discard this cold, and this will be the extent of it. Or maybe it will take hold and become a full blown cold. I don't know what to do in this limbo period. I wish there was something that would just eradicate this. Get you know, we're right on the fringe. So while it's still weak and it hasn't completely engulfed anything in my system, let's fight it and get it out of here, as opposed to it getting in and then running the course. So hopefully we're in option A, but I'm not sure. I'm not taking anything. So I don't know what to take. I know there's a lot of different things out there, and there's an emergency I've seen that. But I don't know. It's amazing that the common cold still, here we are, 21st century, still can't cure the common cold. Isn't that wild? Jeez. What I wanted to talk about actually today is talking about living in the 21st century. I don't know if we've really come to terms with the fact that we are in the 21st century, folks. In fact, next year we will have already completed the first quarter of the new century. Do we even realize that? Because I don't know. We have moved technologically in so many ways forward, but other ways we are still living by some of these old, worn out kind of behaviors that we should have discarded. They were fine when they were either in vogue or when we didn't have the knowledge or the technology or the ability to move forward. But we do, and yet we still abide by some of these adages and these old wives' tales, as they were called. And it's the 21st century. Every so often, you'll hear me, I'll always refer back to Rod Serling and the Twilight Zone. Man, was that guy ahead of his time. In just the way he thought, he was writing that show in the early 60s. I mean, now that's almost 60, it's 64 years later. And the things that he was imagining and thinking about and talking about in terms of the human condition and human behavior in human society, it was so far ahead of where the thinking was at the time. Sadly, Rod Serling passed away. I think he was only 50, or certainly in his early 50s, but maybe just 50. He died of heart failure. I think he died during open heart surgery. If you ever watch The Twilight Zone, you see the guy always smoking, always with a cigarette. I mean, it became part of his persona, but sadly, I'm sure it contributed to his early passing. But Wow. I mean, I'm sure he, you know, he would probably be gone. He'd be 100 right now, probably, right? I think he passed away in the early 70s. So, you know, yeah, I mean, he would probably be gone anyway, but I wish we would have had him around longer, because I think we would have, he could have taught us some more lessons. Those shows still are out there. And he really had some interesting insights into the human condition, how we acted, and where we might be going. But now what I'm talking about today is not all that esoteric. It's very, to me, it's very logical and doable. And this is one thing that we could easily do to get into the times. It's the 21st century. We're not in the 1900s. We're not using steam trains. And one of the great things that I think, I said this back in the 80s when it was just becoming available and recognized. Back in the 80s, when ultrasounds started to become much more common for a variety of different ailments, but certainly one of the first ailments, well, not an ailment, a health issue, was the ultrasound was used for pregnancy to make sure that the fetus was developing correctly, that everything was going fine. And I think that's been one of the great, great tools that we have invented medically. Because, you know, I mean, the birth of a child is pretty much the most important thing that happens on this earth, right? And you want to make sure that everything's going according to plan. And so the ultrasound was invented, and it really heightened and elevated the amount of prenatal care that women can get. So often, childbirth was a great mystery. You know, there was all, once again, these old wives' tales and all this, you know, the baby, you never really knew what was going on in there. A doctor could feel, and a doctor could, you know, take temperatures or pulses and heartbeats, but they didn't really know what was happening, genetically and developmentally, you know, in the body, in the fetus. And, so ultrasounds opened up a whole new world of prenatal care. And, of course, one of the advantages, I've always thought, of the ultrasound was that when you're looking at the state and the health and the development of a fetus, that you could see its sex. And, you know, I mean, anybody over the age of 35 or 40, you know, remembers for the most part that the birth of a child was always the biggest mystery. And the sex of the child really was, first it was, how's the baby doing? How's the mother doing? That's the first question. But the second immediate question was, is it a boy or a girl? Is it a boy or a girl? Is it a boy or a girl? And, there were, once again, all these superstitions and these wives' tales, and women used to sit there and have parties and at the baby showers, and they would do all these different, ridiculous things that are right out of, superstition 101. Oh, they would, dangle a ring over the stomach, and if it went sideways, it was, I don't even know what depending on how the ring was hanging from this chain over the woman's stomach, the shape it made as it dangled was supposedly going to tell you what the sex was. Okay, I mean, this is fine, 5,000 years ago, but not now, not in the 20th century back then, and here we are in the 21st century. And it was always like, oh, well, she's carrying low, like her stomach, so that's a boy. I don't know if that's true or not, but there was all this, these wives' tales or these superstitions or whatever it was, because we didn't know. We always want more knowledge of the unknown, right? And so, you know, the woman is living with this pregnancy for 9 months. It's growing in her body. Her body's changing. She's bonding with this. With this big giant lump in her stomach, right? That's all. If for a while, that's all it is. Occasionally, she'll feel a little kick or something. So she knows there is something in there. But it's a great mystery. It was always this great mystery. And now we have, you know, so the ultrasound comes, and now they're even, I'm sure, more detailed than they were 40 years ago. But I remember when the ultrasound became more prevalent in prenatal care, there were some people that were still clinging to this, oh, I don't want to know. I don't want to know what it is. I want it to be a surprise. And, you know, treating it like it was something, it's a human being. It's not some, you know, some parlor trick. Oh, I want it to be a surprise. What is that? You know, we did that. We created all these little superstitions with the ring, you know, going around, and because we didn't have the knowledge, we didn't have the technology to know what the sex was. So we created all of these superstitions, all of these adages, all of these wives' tales to bring some possible insight and possible knowledge of what the baby sex was, because we really didn't know. But we wanted to give the mother, who was anxious and inquisitive as to, well, is it a boy or a girl, and what's the name going to be, and, you know, what am I going to decorate the room in, pink or blue, and all that stuff. And in the 80s, when the ultrasound came around, suddenly the doctor could tell you, and they'd ask, do you want to know? And a lot of people were still like, no, I want it to be a surprise. I want to wait. It's like, wouldn't you rather start referring to this baby as a human, not as a thing, not as an it? This baby is growing in, it's not going to change. It's already been determined. So, you know, 6 months in, you're not going to say, well, maybe they'll turn into a boy. Maybe, I don't know what it is. It's already is. I don't know about the when the actual sex of a child can be, when it happens or when it's determined, but certainly by the first trimester it is. So after 3 months, at the very least, you can know, and you can start to refer to this bump in your stomach as a person, as a he, as a she. You can even have a name for it. To me, that's more natural. That's treating this like a human, like a person, not like a thing. Oh, I don't know what's happening in there. Well, we know what's happening in there. But people were still, even though they wanted the ultrasound to find out the information that it would give them in terms of, you know, is the baby developing okay? Is everything all right? 5 toes, 5 fingers, any genetic problems that might be happening? They wanted that information. But then they didn't want the sex of the child. What are you talking about? You want to make sure it's okay, but you don't want to know what it is? To me, that sounded, it made no sense logically, and it really was kind of like, it was medieval. Either live in the future, live in the present, or don't. If you don't want to know what the baby was, sex, then don't even do the ultrasound. Then make it a full surprise. We don't know what it is. We don't know how it, you know, if it's healthy or not, but don't, oh, I want to know if it's healthy, everything, but I don't want to know what the sex is. That's the most important part. Is it a boy or a girl? What are you going to have? What's the name? I mean, that's how you start thinking about a kid. I would assume, I don't have any, but, you know, oh, you know, am I going to, you know, have a boy or a girl? And what are they, how are we going to raise them? And you can start to refer to it. as a human. Even if you don't want to do the name yet, at least you could say her or he. So I always thought that was strange. Oh, we don't want to know. Well, now, hey, you know, I've got my problems at times with millennials and where, you know, their views of the world. But one thing I tip my hat to the millennials is they have, as they should, have completely embraced the ultrasound, and they completely want all the information possible, not just the medical information, but also the sex and the gender. And now they have reveal parties. We've got people hand out the ultrasound pictures like they do pictures of them when they go to the Grand Canyon. Hey, here's our baby. Here's our ultrasound picture. You see them everywhere. They're on refrigerators. People have them on their phones. They're everywhere. Good. And younger people today have reveal parties for the grandparents and the family. Hey, we're having a boy. We're having a girl. We can now treat this like a human being instead of treating it like some oddity that's growing, in some alien that's growing in the stomach, and it doesn't become a real thing until it comes out. It's a real thing. So let's begin to treat it like a human. So I've never understood that. So I'm always happy to see that at least in that area we have moved culturally and behaviorally. I don't know if they still do this stuff at baby showers just because it's become a tradition with the stupid, you know, with the dangling ring on the chain. But I mean, to me, that's got to be completely outdated because most people already have had the ultrasound long before the baby shower. And most people today know what the sex is. Look, it's a personal choice. That's fine. I get it. But maybe I'm just too logical. If I want the information that the ultrasound can give me about the health of the child, I also think that I should get the full picture, which includes the gender. As I said before, the reason that we put all this cultural importance or we created these traditions around the surprise of the baby sex is because we didn't have the capabilities to know the sex of the baby before it came out. It wasn't a choice. It was a necessity. And so because we had a limited amount of knowledge and ability to know the sex of a child, we, as we always do, create traditions and create little ceremonies or whatever it is around that. But once we have advanced to being able to have the sex of the child, all those things should go away. They should be swept away. We don't use buggies anymore. We use cars. You know, it's funny how we discard things from the past that have become outdated, but then other things we still cling to, and there's no logic to it. So even 40 years ago, I was saying, well, why wouldn't you want to know the sex? Oh, I want it to be a surprise. Well, I want it to be a surprise is such an antiquated view. And this is what I want to talk about now. We are sitting in now this has nothing to do with childbirth at all. And once again, I'm looking at my script here. And I was not intending to talk about the sex of, the ultrasounds and sex of a child here when I look at my script. For this show. This show is very heavily scripted, as I'm sure you could tell. But it does give you an example of clinging to old traditions that don't really have a place in a modern society, which is what I am trying to talk about now today. It may not seem to, it might on its face, it might not have the same importance about, you know, the birth of a child of what I want to talk about here, but it's about living in the present and the future, as opposed to clinging to these old-fashioned, outdated traditions that were formed as traditions out of our capabilities and extent of our knowledge at the time. We need to move forward. It's the 21st century. As I said before, it's almost one quarter of it done. I mean, we haven't just started. The year 2000, I don't even remember. There's some people that weren't even born in the year 2000. You know, 9/11 happened, you know, in 2001. That is a history. That's a line in a history book to people that are in their teens or early 20s. It might as well be Pearl Harbor to those of us who were born, you know, after World War II. Our parents remembered World War II. They lived through it, but I remember them being very somber and very sad when it was December 7th every year, the anniversary. But it's the same way. There were people that were there when Lincoln got shot, and now we go to Ford's Theater, and I've been there, and you see it, and you are sad about what happened, but I don't have a visceral or personal memory of it. But this is what I want to talk about today, because it's driving me crazy. So, especially here in Chicago, but everywhere. Recently, in Chicago, two of our sports teams, and this is not sports oriented, this is about, once again, traditions, but I'm going to use this because it has to do with, excuse me, with sports or any kind of outdoor events. So it's not just sports, it's concerts, it's anything that goes on. We are having in the Chicago area some big debates and big controversies about the stadiums where at least two, if not more, who knows, of our major sports, our major outdoor sports teams are going to play for the next 40 or 50 years. The Chicago Bears have been playing at the horribly antiquated venue on the lakefront in Chicago called Soldier Field. It's run by the Chicago Park District, where high school kids play, you know, and college people play their sports, and that's where the Chicago Bears, the professional football team, in the most popular and biggest money grossing sport in the world. Chicago Bears, one of the founding members of the NFL, George Halas helped found the NFL, one of the most tradition-filled legacy teams in the league, and it plays in one of the most antiquated, unspectacular, embarrassing venues in the league, if not even in the world. It was fine when football was in its infancy, but football now has elevated itself to the biggest money-making, biggest influential, biggest gambling, and most popular sport in this country, and whatever happens in this country, you can argue, in the world. Now, granted, I know soccer is probably a bigger sport internationally. I get it, but let's face it, the NFL, at least in the United States, is the sport. It has changed the gambling. It has changed people's behaviors.
It is the number one sport. It has bypassed baseball, and it is now the number one sport in any way that you, any matrix that you can use to, or metrics, I guess, to define that. Meanwhile, this was this small, you know, it was fine. It was big for the time, but once again, it's outdated. And then, ridiculously, former Mayor Richard M. Daley and the short-sighted Chicago Bears ownership created some horrible renovation that, in order to keep the colonnades of the Soldier Field, there's some, you know, war related, you know, once again, it's an architectural behemoth. It's ugly. It's non-functional. It's bad for viewing. It's horrible. Just one part of the Richard M. Daley legacy that has hurt this city. Ridiculous. So for the first time, I mean, the Bears started playing in Wrigley Field. Then they moved to Soldier Field. I mean, Wrigley, they almost had to reconfigure the field. It was crazy to play football games in Wrigley Field, in a baseball field. Then they went into Soldier Field, which was a little better. But as I said, it's run by the Park District. For 40 or 50 years, it's so poorly kept. There's always turf problems. The guys that are running, you know, that are cutting the grass for kids' fields, you know, in Park District parks, are the same guys who are doing it for professional athletes. What are we talking about? The Bears are worth $5 billion. Have a respectable, world-class venue, not only befitting the city of Chicago that prides itself on being the international city, which it wants to be, but not when ugly places like Soldier Field are hanging around. That doesn't do anything to elevate the city's reputation. It certainly doesn't, playing in Soldier Field certainly doesn't elevate the Bears' reputation as one of the founding members of the NFL, playing in the worst, ugliest stadium in the league. So finally, in a burst of what would seem to be, I don't even know where it came from, but actual logic, for the first time, Bear ownership looking like they actually have some insight and creative vision. They purchase the land and the former Arlington Park racetrack in the northwest suburbs of Chicago. Huge tract of land, hundreds of acres, for $200 million, whatever it is. And they're going to build for finally what would seem to be finally build from scratch instead of renovating or blocking onto previously built stadiums that are out of date, that are old, that need to just be shelved, if not knocked down. Hey, look, if you can knock down Yankee Stadium, you can knock down any venue for sports. Yankee Stadium probably had the original had the greatest legacy. Some of the greatest baseball players in history played in Yankee Stadium. Babe Ruth, Mickey Mantle, Joe DiMaggio, everybody. And you know what? George Steinbrenner knocked it down and built a better one and a new one. So if you can knock down Yankee Stadium, you can knock down any stadium. Don't give me all that once again, this outdated tradition of, and my God, playing in Soldier Field has no tradition. It was a horrible place to play to begin with. It had had for years. It had AstroTurf that players were killing themselves on this hard concrete AstroTurf. It was Soldier Field has been horrible from its beginning, and all they've done is try to update its horribleness. So finally, the Bears ownership, I don't know what happened. Suddenly, they get somebody got a bright idea that actually made sense. And now, it's 2 years later, and it's still languishing in classic Bears tradition. They haven't even begun to build this. Even if they built, if they started building today, which they're not going to, this thing wouldn't be done until maybe 2028. It's going to take time. And they're still futzing around. So they finally made a smart business and cultural, and it was a great move. Finally, the Bears seem to be moving into the 21st century after living in the 19th century for most of their existence. And now it's languishing. And now they're even, drives me crazy. They're even talking about, you know, and I don't know if it's leverage to get a better deal in Arlington Heights. Hopefully this Arlington Heights thing happens. The powers that be, you know, the local governments and the local school districts, they want, you know, of course, you know, the Bears are going to make a boatload of money. So they want money, you know, for, you know, of all the taxes, you know, for schools. I get it. But there comes a time when we have to make a decision, move forward. Everybody, you just got to start compromising and get the thing done. The land is just sitting there. Meanwhile, the Bears and the fans are playing in this horrible field. So hopefully, they're talking about building in downtown again. I'm like putting some kind of a, you know, in some area that was right next to the parking lot. George Lucas was going to use it for his big science fiction museum, if you remember that a few years ago. And then a local activist group, the Friends of the Park, sued. They said, hey, you know, you can't build on this land that's on the lakefront. But now if George Lucas was ruled against, he can't build there, then why is that even floating? It's silly. Unless the city says, well, you know, the Bears are from Chicago and George Lucas is from California, so that's why. I mean, all that BS. If somebody wants to build something that's going to bring tourism and going to bring some appeal to the city, who cares where they're from? But once again, Chicago lives in this kind of Mayberry-ish kind of view of the world many times. But if you couldn't build George Lucas's elaborate museum on that land, then why can the Bears? Why would the courts then change their mind? If a law is a law, so forget that. Go out to Arlington Heights, build a world-class domed stadium. And finally, let the Bears, and especially their loyal fans, who have shown a loyalty to a horribly run franchise for decades, and that's just not my opinion. We're almost 40 years away from the last Super Bowl victory, folks. 40 years, that's a couple of generations. That's ineptness. So the fans, I don't even know why the Bear fans have given this loyalty every year to the Bears, because the Bears have certainly not given it back to their fans. So this field, if they don't want to spend money to actually, you know, get real coaches and real players and real general managers who have real experience in winning Super Bowls, if they don't want to do that, at the very least, if you're not going to give your fans a winning team, which you haven't done in almost 50 years, in more almost 40 years, at least give them a nice place to see this catastrophe that happens every year that's called Chicago Bears football. least give them a world-class stadium befitting of the Chicago area. Oh, well, if it's in Arlington Heights, it can't be the Chicago Bears. Stop with these old, once again, outdated viewpoints. Very few teams that use the name of the city are even located. I was just in San Francisco. They just built, they had Candlestick Park, which was a horrible place to see a game, especially in baseball, but it was right on the bay. I went to a game there one time. It was freezing in San Francisco, freezing in the summer because the winds at night were just barreling in. So what did they do? They built a world-class stadium in Santa Clara, California, which is 45 minutes away from San Francisco. And guess what? They're still called the San Francisco 49ers. The Dallas Cowboys, I don't think, ever played in Dallas. They were always in Irving, Texas. I don't know where they play now. But once again, they built a world-class stadium. Huge. Beautiful. Doesn't have to be in the city. Get away from these antiquated views. It's the 21st century. So hopefully they build a dome, and it better be a domed stadium. That's the other thing that's going to drive me. If that doesn't at least have, if it's not a dome, it better have a retractable roof. This BS about Bears weather is once again an antiquated, there's no such thing as Bears weather. The players don't live in Chicago. The players aren't used to it. Most of the players, as soon as the season ends, they go, they're either from a warm place or they go to a warm place. They don't play in a warm, and now when they practice indoors. How come they can practice indoors, but they have to play outside for this Bears weather crap that is so ridiculously, you know, an antiquated thought that belongs back when, yeah, you know what? There was a thing as such as Bear weather because there we didn't have the technology to build a dome stadium. And then in the 70s, they did. They built the Astrodome. And that's 50 years ago. And this is my point as a part of this too. What I believe is every new stadium that is built from now on, if it's not a seal dome, at the very least, it should have a retractable roof. If you want to keep playing with, oh, you know, the weather, okay. But you know what? When it's 5 degrees, it's not fun for anybody. And once again, think about your fans. Don't worry about, you know, this Bears weather stuff. But what about the fans? I've been to one game at Soldier Field in December, and it was ridiculous. I was dressed like Randy from Christmas Story. I couldn't even move. I had so many layers. That's an antiquated view. We have the technology now to have a dome stadium that is world class in terms of a viewing experience, climate controlled. The weather outside has nothing to do with what's going on inside, and that's the way it's supposed to be. 50 years ago, 100 years ago, we didn't have the capabilities to build a retractable dome, or we didn't have the capabilities or the money to build a dome stadium. But you know what? The NFL is the most richest sport in the country, if not the world. So these owners can afford to build a dome that give their fans and their players the optimum viewing and playing experience. In a weather controlled stadium. Yes, if you want to cling to this thing, then at the very least have a retractable dome. But this way, there's no such thing as a rainout. There's no such thing. This what drove me crazy. Did you see what was going on in Buffalo a few weeks ago during the playoffs? This is what really, you know, got me to thinking about this. They were offering fans $20 an hour to help shovel the snow out of the stadium in Buffalo because they you know, Buffalo gets destroyed with snow. It's every year. It's not like, oh, this was some weird anomaly. Buffalo gets 90 to 100 inches of snow all the time. We know that. It reminded me like we're in the 1930s. We're hiring people to shovel snow out of the aisles of a stadium. In 2024, we're doing this? In the 21st century? We're hiring people to shovel snow? Build a new stadium. If you're in Buffalo, build a new stadium with a dome and forget about it. If you go to right now in Minnesota and in Detroit, which are cold weather cities, they both have beautiful domes. They just played a playoff game in Detroit. It was freezing outside. You couldn't tell. The fans weren't even wearing coats inside to watch the game. And the game was played, and the players are playing under optimum conditions. So you were seeing the game play as it should be. You were seeing the quality of the teams as it should be, not with weather being an issue, snow or rain. If we're going to put such a premium and such an importance on football, especially, because football plays in any weather, at least baseball has the brains to say, hey, it's raining, we can't play. But football is tough. You got to play in any weather. Yeah, so then if it's snowing or raining, they can't pass like they would, and the games are boring and they're messy. People are slipping and sliding. They're not passing like they would. They're running and they're falling down, and the scores are 14-7. And they're sloppy games because of the weather. Well, if you're going to say football is important to this country, it's our main event. It's our main attraction. It gets the highest TV ratings, Super Bowl every year, Sunday night football, whatever it is. It's the highest rated show on network television. If it's important to people's lives, if it's important as an event, then it should be played the best way it can under the most optimum conditions. And if you're a league that is making money hand over foot, from now on, any new stadium that is in the NFL or in Major League Baseball, any outdoor stadium that houses baseball, soccer here in the United States, it's growing, but it still has never become on the level of football and baseball. And I don't think it ever will. Once every 4 years for the World Cup, everybody gets all excited about soccer, and then it goes down. Sorry, but that's the truth, folks. We've been hearing that story about when the kids grow up that are playing soccer now, it's going to be the number one. It's not. It's huge. It's an international sport. It's huge in Europe. It's their sport. It's not ours. Football and baseball still eclipse it in terms of attendance and excitement. But regardless, soccer should be played indoors. Not indoor soccer in an arena. I don't mean that. But once again, any major sport that's of importance to anybody should be played in the most optimum conditions possible. So you need at least a retractable dome or roof or a complete dome. And there is no excuse for that. So if the Bears are thinking of building a stadium, it shouldn't even be their preference. Like, oh, we're going to... No. There should be a rule. The NFL should rule. Any new stadium built after 2024 must have a retractable roof or a dome, period. So that within 10 or 15 years, the entire league will have domed or retractable roof stadiums so that a Super Bowl A could be played anywhere in any city, because now it's always warm weather places. Because so you want to play the Super Bowl in a warm weather climate because this is the most important game of the year. Oh, you want optimum conditions so the two teams can play the best they can and, under the best conditions so you get a real game? Oh, for the Super Bowl, you will dictate that. But you won't do that for the regular season when these poor people with season tickets go out there 8 times a year in cold weather cities? They have to freeze their butts off because it's football weather? BS. There's no such thing as football weather. Football weather is good weather. Football weather is in a dome or is sealed where it's 70 degrees. It's optimum conditions. That's football. That's football weather. Now, stop clinging to these. We had football weather before because we didn't have a choice. We had to play outdoors. We didn't have the technology for a dome or a retractable roof. So we created, just like we created with all the experience of, I want to be surprised when it's a boy or a girl. The same thing. Well, if it's snow, it's Bears weather because we play it. Well, but now we have the technology that for Bears weather is a myth. It always has been. Give your fans and your players a comfortable atmosphere to watch the game and to play the game. And it's the same thing with baseball. There's some, like here, Milwaukee, perfect example. They have a retractable roof. If it's going to rain, they close the roof. If it's going to be sunny, they open the roof. I've been in Milwaukee Stadium where they've opened, well, it looks like it might rain, and they close it. The game goes on. There's no rainouts. What are we talking about? It's the 21st century. There shouldn't be any more rainouts. Every baseball stadium that is built should have, new stadium, should have at the very least a retractable roof, if not a dome. If baseball is the past, the America's pastime and the sunny day, okay, I'll give you that. Then build a retractable roof for, you're playing throughout the summer. It rains in the summer. So stop pretending that it's 1910. Use all the boatloads of money that you've made and build a retractable roof. So there's no more rainouts. If I buy a ticket to a game in Milwaukee, I don't ever have to check what the weather's going to be. I know there's going to be a game that day. But if I bought a ticket to Wrigley Field or Sox Park, I don't know. I'm praying it doesn't rain that day because it's no fun to sit out in the rain and watch a game for 9 innings. Or have the game, or I take off of work and I make plans for somebody, and then, oh, they've called the game off because it's going to rain already. They sometimes call the game off 8 hours before because now we have the technology for the weather to see that a storm's coming before. Well, we don't know if it's going to rain. Okay. If you use the technology to call a game off because you're using the technology of weather forecasting to see that that this game is going to, when it starts, it's going to rain, then use the engineering technology to take the rain out of the equation. Why is this so hard? No sports team in America can cry poor. No sports team. They're owned by billionaires. In these days, you have to be. Every team should have a retractable roof or dome that plays any outdoor sport. And once again, you're opening it up now then for multiple uses. Concerts. Who wants to? I went to see Elton John a couple of years ago at Soldier Field in August. It was 95% humidity. My pants before the concert were drenched in sweat. At the concert, it was even hotter inside the stadium. I was sweating when I was in the parking lot walking to the thing. I was drenched by the time I got in my seat, not from rain, but from the heat and the humidity. If you're going to a Taylor Swift concert or whatever now, with tickets are $400 or $500 a piece in stadiums like this, first of all, A, I'm buying these tickets 6 months in advance. If it's an outdoor stadium like that, it's mostly in the summer if it's not in a dome. And now I have to worry. Oh, my God, I hope it doesn't rain. Believe me, I've been at outdoor shows where it has rained like cats and dogs from before the show started until it ended, where I was drenched. Saw Bruce Springsteen several years ago at Wrigley Field. There was a puddle in front of me. I was completely drenched. I went to England to see Elton John perform outside in a soccer stadium. It poured like torrential. I wouldn't have stood, if it wasn't for this concert, I wouldn't even have gone out to my car. It was raining so hard. And I sat for four hours, by the time I got there and waited for the show to start, in the pouring, drenching rain. So if you're going to build a new stadium, whether it's a football stadium for 70 or 80,000 people or a baseball stadium for 40,000, and you're going to start and you're going to have multi-uses for it, mainly concerts as well, or other events like the Final Four for basketball that you want a big crowd, not just the 20,000 in an indoor arena. If you've got a dome or retractable roof, now you can have that. Chicago hasn't had a Final Four because it doesn't have an indoor stadium big enough. But Chicago would be the greatest place to have a Final Four. But you need 60 or 70 or 80,000 seats. Chicago hasn't hosted a Super Bowl ever because no one's going to go watch a game in 10-degree weather in January. A few years ago, they had the Super Bowl in New York, and they were biting their nails. They got so lucky that the temperature in New York in January or early February was 40 degrees. They got so lucky. But you can't count on that. You can't have people flying from across the country to come to a cold weather city in the winter and hope that it's nice. We have the technology to take hope out. It's the 21st century. Act like it. The White Sox now, they built this white elephant stadium on the south side that they blackmailed the state for 30 years ago. It was out of date the second year it was in existence. It's sterile. The views were bad. The upper deck was horribly tilted. That people were getting, that felt like they were getting vertigo. Horribly built, designed stadium from day one. Because Jerry Reinsdorf, who had a chance to build a stadium that had the plans of Camden Yards, which was kind of like a mini, you know, like a takeoff on the vintage Wrigley Field, had such a block in his head about the Cubs. Oh, well, if the Cubs have that old crappy Wrigley Field, we're going to have the stadium of the future. No, it wasn't. Baseball is all about tradition. The stadium of the future, Sox Park, was supposed to be the stadium of the future. It was outdated within 1 year. They continued to try to renovate that thing to make it more welcoming and site friendly. It's horrible. And even Jerry Reinsdorf has finally admitted it after 30 years. So now they want to build a new one in another spot on the south side. Fine. It better have a roof on it. It better have a retractable roof. If you're going to start from scratch, you better put a retractable roof on it. If the Bears are going to build a stadium, it better have a dome or a retractable roof on it. Any stadium. If I'm going to go see a concert in Arlington Heights 10 years from now, it better have a roof on it. So I'm not sitting in the sweltering heat or buying this expensive ticket and crossing my fingers that it doesn't rain. It's the 21st century, folks. Let's act like it. And this, to me, is one of the easiest things we can do. American sports cannot cry poor. So let's get rid of all these, oh, football, weather, baseball needs to be played in the sunshine. Yes, okay, baseball should be played in the sunshine. But why do we say that? Because that's when it started. So the sunshine became a part of the game out of necessity. But now we have the technology and the capability so that if it rains, the people have to sit there with ponchos on in the pouring rain. Or people have to sit there in sub-zero temperatures for paying $500 a ticket to go to a football game and getting frostbite. Or a team doesn't act like we're in the 1940s and actually has to hire fans to shovel them out. To shovel snow. What the heck? It's the 21st century. Let's act like it. And this is just one aspect, but it's the easiest one, and it's the most obvious. As I said, there's a lot of stadium talk here in Chicago, and I'm watching the playoffs here for football, and I'm watching what's going on in Buffalo, and then it was raining in San Francisco, ridiculously. They know San Francisco has crazy weather. They know the San Francisco area has crazy weather. Build, if you don't want to build a dome, then build the retractable roof. As I said, I've been in Milwaukee Stadium. It's a marvel. We went to a game, the sun was out in the first three innings. By the sixth inning, it was dark and cloudy. And you know what? All of a sudden I looked up and the roof started moving and the game continued. Didn't get wet, saw the whole game, went home. Got my money's worth. Didn't have to sit out in the rain, get drenched, or have a rain delay. What's a rain? In the 21st century, we're having rain delays? This sounds archaic. We have the technology. We have the means. Why are we still living by these old adages and these old wives' tales and these old traditions that are so outdated? Get into the 21st century. So hopefully, somebody with some brains is going to make an edict in both of the major outdoor sports here in America, baseball and football. And as I said before, using these stadiums for multi-uses then, if you have a roof or a dome. Not just for the Cubs to play, but concerts, and people can enjoy it without worrying about getting drenched. I speak from personal experience. It's not fun. And especially now when tickets are $300 or $400 a piece. When they were $10, you say, hey, you know what? That's what it comes with. If it rains, it rains. It comes with, you know, I paid $10, big deal. When you're paying $300 or $400 for a face value ticket, no, I don't want to have to check the weather forecast. It better be a dome. It better have a roof on it. That concert better be going on, and I better be comfortable, as well as the safety of the act. I mean, it's pouring rain. I mean, I saw Bruce Springsteen out there. I'm like, there's so much electricity on that stage, and it's pouring rain. And it's like, yes, they are under an enclosure, an outdoor enclosure. But you know, when the wind is blowing, rain blows everywhere. So these guys are basically up there, you know, performing with electrical equipment, and they're possibly under the threat of electrocution at every minute. That's fine if this was the 1800s and we didn't have the ability, but we do. We have the money. We have the technology. Now let's just have the brains. Let's stop living in the past and live in the present and the future. We're not living in the 1800s. We're not living in the 19th century. We're living in the 21st century. Let's act like it. And so ends another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday a new episode is posted at WGNRadio.com or wherever you go to find your favorite podcast. We are there. And don't forget to tell your friends, tell your family, tell anybody who listens to a podcast that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and it should be theirs too. Your loyalty and devotion are much appreciated. Hope you enjoyed episode number 402. I'm Jim Tirano. I ain't here on business. I'm only here for fun. You've been listening to Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, from the end of my mind to your ears.